What's happening, everyone? This is Kyle Draper, and welcome into the Celtics Talk Podcast. As always, I'm joined by A'Sherrod Blakely.
What's up, Kyle?
Nothing, man.
Draper.
Getting ready for the NBA draft, getting ready for NBA free agency. We're going to talk to Tony Jones of the Salt Lake Tribune about Gordon Hayward and all the rumors going on. Is Gordon Hayward coming to Boston? Is he staying in Utah? And what about the Miami Heat? Mm-hmm. Also, the rumor mill is going crazy with the news about Blake Griffin. Adrian Wojnarowski suggesting that the Celtics are going to go hard after Blake Griffin. He's one of their two primary targets, Blake and Gordon Hayward. So we're going to dive right into that right now. I'm on the fence about who I would rather want, to be honest.
You
with
know
you.
What? I'm not as much on the fence. I think, first of all, either one of those guys is going to make you better. I mean, I think everyone agrees with that. I think that the interesting thing about Blake Griffin is that, you know, his history of injuries makes me nervous about him.
Right.
Makes me really nervous. But when I look at the talent, and I look at the talent void that the Celtics have at that position, he seems like someone that could come in and give them, I think, a better initial impact.
Mm-hmm.
And when I think about the playoffs, I think about him as a guy that gives the Celtics a dimension that they didn't have this past year. And when you talk about Gordon Hayward, you know, he's a good player. I mean, there's no question about that. And he can do a lot of really good things to help teams win. But I'm not sure if the impact that let's say if you got a healthy Gordon Hayward and a healthy Blake Griffin, I'm not sure if Gordon Hayward's impact is going to be as great as it would with a Blake Griffin.
Well, you know, the thing you mentioned with Blake is the injury situation. Yeah. Played, what, 96 games combined over the last two regular seasons?
Mm-hmm.
And if he was healthy,
it'd be a no-brainer.
It'd be a no-brainer to me because you're right. I mean, outside of Al Horford, they don't have anybody else. I mean, is Zizic going to be, you know, a 30-minute a night kind of guy?
We know they're counting
on him as part of the rotation, but I don't think he's ready, you know, to be a 30-minute kind of night guy.
Right, and that's the conundrum that the Celtics find themselves in. I mean, there's no question that Blake Griffin is the type of player that when you're talking about taking that next step from where you are now, you want. But having said that, committing the kind of resources that you're going to have to a guy who might play 30, 35 games, I mean, you basically have yourself a glorified Joel Embiid, a guy that's only gonna, give you like a third of a season. I mean, really, when you think about it, Embiid is a phenomenal player, but he plays so few games that you can't really feel all that committed to him being what you need going forward. And again, that's not dissing his talent. That's just acknowledging the fact that the cat stays hurt a lot, and so does Blake Griffin.
Yeah, and the Sixers are going to have to make a decision about Embiid.
Yeah, they do.
Whether to pay him.
That's
going to
be one of the all-time great hustles if that dude get a near max contract
for 30
games a year. Love it.
Oh, man. But, you know, here's the thing. If you get Gordon Hayward, who I think – is just now entering his prime. He's increased his scoring every single year.
Yeah.
Did great in the postseason as well. Don't you need an offensive threat outside of Isaiah Thomas on this team?
You do. You do. And that's why I'm saying if both of those guys are healthy, you're going to get that either way. Because Gordon can give you scoring from the perimeter and obviously driving to the basket. And Blake can get you buckets around the rim. And he runs the floor so well, he can get you some buckets in transition as well. So I don't think the scoring aspect is all that important, to be candid. I think both of those guys are going to give you similar production. But the difference to me is what we've been talking about, health. You know, Gordon Hayward, throughout his career, he's been pretty healthy.
Yeah.
Blake Griffin, not so much. To me, that's the only thing, if you're the Boston Celtics, that will make you seriously pause about pulling the trigger on, let's say, Blake Griffin deal if you get an opportunity to sign him.
How serious do you think – how likely is it that Blake comes here? I mean, do you think he's done with the whole Clippers situation?
No, I don't.
You don't?
I don't. I think Blake's just a different kind of dude.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't think he lusts winning a championship the way a lot of guys in the league do. I think Blake is a guy that wants to play. He wants an opportunity to be in, you know, the center of attention.
Yeah.
And he's good. There's no question about that. And he's going to play hard and do all those things. But I don't think he has that desire that I don't think a lot of guys in the NBA have. I mean, he's a good player, but I'm not sure that he's willing to maybe take less money, which he would do if he didn't sign a max deal in L.A. and sign, let's say, one with Boston. He'd be taking less money to play for a team where he'd have a more diminished role, but the chances of winning would be greater. I'm not convinced that he's that kind of dude. Now, Gordon Hayward, I do believe would do that. I think that if he, in his mind, believes that Boston gives him the best chance at winning a championship or at least better competing for one, I think he would be much more open to that than, let's say, a Blake.
And we do, I think, both agree Boston does give him a better chance to at least get to the finals or get deep into the playoffs.
If things play out the way a lot of people think they will, LeBron isn't going to be in Cleveland much longer. He's going to be taking his talents to
LeBron
L.A.
LeBron ain't going anywhere,
dude. Hear me out. But you know and I know that's the word on the street.
Yeah,
and
if
let's say that narrative does play out and he's in Boston, now all of a sudden you got a chance to get to the finals much easier than you would if you stayed in Utah. And the two individual/teams that you're worried the most about, one of them is going to knock the other off.
Yeah.
So now all of a sudden, that doesn't necessarily mean that team will be weaker if you get to the finals, but what it does mean, the path to get there is a lot easier now. And I think those are the kind of things that Gordon, he may not spend a whole lot of time obsessing over those things, but when he's looking at all the reasons why I might leave, I can't imagine that wouldn't be somewhere on his list.
You know, and we're going to ask Tony Jones, about Gordon Hayward in a minute, but the Miami Heat are also said to be interested. And you and I disagree on this.
Yes.
I think if Pat Riley puts those rings on the table, big fella, Miami's a legitimate threat to the Celtics.
They're a legitimate threat because they can create enough cap space to make it happen. That's why they're a legitimate threat. And the tax benefits, obviously, I mean, everyone who Miami talks to, that's out there. But, again, you add them to that mix, that team isn't going to the finals.
Conference finals, maybe?
No, they're not going to the conference finals.
Dude, let's break it down. I got the pen and paper right here. Let's break down the roster.
Okay, go ahead.
Goran Dragic.
Okay, good player.
Good player, right?
Good player.
Whiteside.
Good player, except to the last 2 or 3 minutes of the game where you got to take him out because he can't shoot free throws.
But Whiteside is better than any big man the Celtics have right now. I would take
Al Horford over him.
You're crazy.
I'm going to tell you why.
Hassan Whiteside, dude?
If he's not rebounding and scoring around the basket,
he's
what is he going to do?
Blocking shots.
Okay, so he'll get 3 or 4 of those a game.
So a big three of Dragic, Hayward, and Whiteside versus a big three of IT, Hayward, and Al. I'm saying Miami's
Drapes, you're telling me that Miami.
No, you didn't let me finish. See, you're doing what I do to you.
You didn't let me finish. I'm sorry. That's bad.
Miami's not that far off. They're not that far behind.
I never said that. But what I'm saying is this. The Celtics, that big three that you just laid out for Boston, is better than that Miami one. And last I checked, that's what we were talking about.
And no state income tax in Florida.
That's a little cash.
That's extra money in your pocket, big
fella. At the point where Gordon Hayward decides to leave Utah, he ain't thinking about the money like that because he just left over $40-some million dollars on the table by leaving Utah. So money ain't going to be that big a deal if he decides to leave. Take that look. That little hookup he gets with state income taxes, he's not going to be sweating that.
All right, before we get to Tony Jones,
winning.
One thing about Blake Griffin.
Okay.
Does Chris Paul situation impact what Blake does?
I think, not
if Paul goes to San Antonio?
Not just Chris Paul, but then you got J.J. Redick.
Exactly.
You look at that team, it's like a garage sale, man. Everybody's looking at everything they got on sale, and they got nice stuff. Yeah. This is the garage sale in the high rent district. This is like a Wellesley, Massachusetts garage sale we talk about right here. Anything you pick up is going to be nice. And that, to me, that's why if I'm Blake Griffin, I'm thinking about bouncing on the rail because you don't know what you're going to be stuck with if you stick around. You don't know if Chris Paul is going to stay. If I'm Chris Paul, I'm out. I'm trying to hook on with San Antonio. That makes so much sense for him and them.
Yeah.
If I'm J.J. Redick, I'm looking for any team that wants to pay me because he has a skill set that every team, including the Boston Celtics, could use, a knockdown shooter.
Yep.
So and that's just not going to happen if you don't have Chris Paul setting up the offense, setting the table for you to get open. So the Clippers,
Docs could be falling apart big time, dude.
They could be in the lottery next year.
Celtics got one of their picks too.
They could be in the lottery next year. The Clippers. They're on the edge, on the cusp of either staying as they are, which is a good playoff team, but not winning the title, or they could hit rock bottom.
All right, let's get our man.
And we know how Doc feels about rebuilding.
Hey, he's going to jump ship back to Orlando or something like that. He'll leave somewhere else. All right, let's get our man Tony Jones on the phone to talk more about Gordon Hayward. All right, joining us now on the Celtics Talk podcast, it's Tony Jones, who covers the Utah Jazz and the NBA for the Salt Lake Tribune. And Tony, welcome to the podcast, man.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Last time that we did this, didn't I have an oil change?
You had some oil change issues,
at Jiffy
Tony.
Lube,
that's right.
Or something like that. Where you at now? The grocery store or something like that? Doing something else, I know.
Yeah, man, it was one of those one-stop shots for everything.
Oh, see.
You know, it kind of went left. So, you know.
Wide left.
Tony, let's just dive right into it, man. Everybody wants to know where Gordon Hayward is going to play next season. Obviously, Boston fans confident that he'll come here. What are you hearing about Hayward's future?
I'm not hearing much right now. I mean, you know, the only thing that I really know definitively is that, you know, Hayward will opt out of his contract on June 30th and become an unrestricted free agent on July 1st. I mean, here's the thing. I mean, you know, that decision isn't made. I think Hayward's going to be pretty meticulous in the process. He's obviously going to take a meeting from the Celtics. I think he's going to take a meeting from the Miami Heat, and obviously he's going to listen to a pitch from the Utah Jazz. I think the order of which he takes meetings, I think that's going to be important as well. But I also think, you know, there's a lot to be decided. I think there's how many days between now and July 1st? I mean, there's 2 weeks,
2 weeks?
And 2 days. 2 weeks between now and July 1st. And I think, you know, especially in terms of the Celtics and the Jazz, I think that their rosters in the next 2 weeks have the potential to look different than the rosters now. And I'm not just talking about the draft. So it'll be interesting to see for sure. But I think it's going to be really close either way.
Tony, you mentioned a minute ago about how you thought the order in which he visited or he dealt with teams would be important. Why is that?
You know, I think the teams, you know, that go last in these meetings. I mean, I think that they, you know, the opportunity to leave last impressions. I think that that's important. You know, especially, you know, when you look at the recruiting process and everything. And you know, so I tend to think that that means something a little bit, you know, because if you go first and then, you know, Gordon doesn't make this decision for 5 days. I mean, you know, that, you know, the team that goes last has a chance to make a last impression, a really good impression. So I just think, you know, just in my opinion, I think that that's kind of important and that kind of means something. But I mean, I think a lot of things means something. I think what doesn't mean anything is when Isaiah Thomas and Al Horford follow somebody on Instagram. I don't think that means much at all. So
it means it means your boy getting his Twitter and Instagram numbers up. That's what that means, Tony. Come on now.
Yeah, that's what that means. But it doesn't mean much in terms of a major life decision. So, you know, that's where I would. If I were a Boston fan, that's where I would stop the victory lap. I would say this. I think Boston is a real viable option for Gordon because, you know, I think the Celtics are a really, really good team. And obviously they're a historic franchise and they've been a really well-run franchise. When you talk about Danny Ainge, but the Jazz are as well. I mean, right now they're a very, very well-run franchise, and they're a franchise that I think has a chance next year to be either the third or the second best team in the Western Conference. So, you know, I think as confident as Boston fans are in terms of the state of their team, I think Jazz fans have every reason to be just as confident.
Yeah, Tony, because you mentioned the roster. I could argue that the Jazz roster, as currently constituted, is better than the Celtics. The only difference is the Celtics play in the Eastern Conference. How much do you think, you know, being able to avoid Golden State, being able to avoid San Antonio, how much do you think that will factor into Gordon Hayward's decision?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, I think that that does factor. But then if you're Gordon Hayward, you're saying, hey, you know, I got to beat LeBron James. And, you know, LeBron James to me is the greatest player of our generation. He's the best player in our league right now. You know, but he's 32 years old and he's 33. He'll be 33 in December. So the question is, if you're Gordon, is, you know, how long can LeBron James, you know, be 32 and play like a 26-year-old, which is what he played like this year, or be 33 and play like a 27-year-old? How long can he stay healthy? How long can he stay at the top of his game? And what's the upside for what's the roster upside for the Cleveland Cavaliers in the 4 years that I would be out east if I were to sign with Boston? If you're Gordon Hayward, those are some of the questions that you're answering, that you're asking. And if you're Gordon Hayward and you want to stay with Utah, what's the roster upside with the Jazz? You know, if I stay with the Jazz, can we construct a team that's good enough to not only beat the San Antonio Spurs, but challenge the Golden State Warriors? And those are difficult questions to answer on a lot of levels. But, you know, here's the thing. As currently constructed, Gordon Hayward plays with the best player out of the two rosters, and that's Rudy Gobert. But, you know, when you talk about roster upside, you know, obviously the Celtics are probably going to add Markelle Fultz this year, and next year they're going to have a top five pick, and that top five pick could turn into somebody like a Michael Porter, who's a really, really, really good, you know, shooting guard, small forward prospect. So, you know, it'll be interesting. I think both teams are in a really good spot. So I think it's going to come down to other things other than basketball decision.
When you talk about other things, Tony, I think we need to just hit up the elephant in the room right off the jump. Money. He can get, even though he didn't get the Supermax, you know, status, by not making it one of the All-NBA teams, he still can make more money in Utah than he can with any other team. How big a factor will the payday at the end of all this be in his decision?
Well, the current payday, I don't think it's going to be that big a factor. I mean, if Gordon were to opt in and sign, I mean, not opt in, but if Gordon were to sign a five-year max with Utah, he would make $179 million. If he were to sign a four-year max, which is the max that he could sign anywhere else, with the Boston Celtics, he'd make 4 years and $132 million. So that's a discrepancy of about $47 million. So that seems big, but I think Gordon's pretty confident that, you know, hey, he's 27 years old. You know, he's, you know, just entering his prime. You know, he's going to get paid in that fifth year regardless of where he goes. So I don't think that's going to be as much or as big, is going to have as big an impact on Gordon as Utah fans hope it would. Now here's the thing that could have an impact. Let's say Gordon opts in to the Utah Jazz, signs a 1-1, which is a 1 year deal with a 1 year player option,
right,
and says, hey, I'm going to bet on myself that I missed all NBA this year, because I think he actually should have made all NBA this year. I think he should have made 13. And I'm going to opt in, bet on myself, and try to make all NBA 13 next year. And let's say he makes it next year. Then all of a sudden, he qualifies for that Supermax. And then he can re-sign with the Jazz and sign that five-year, $200 or $11 billion contract that the Supermax offers. So that's an option that he does have with the Jazz. And I think that could make an impact.
Yeah,
if he decides to bet on himself.
The one concern I would have with that, though, if I were Utah, is that you got to know a number of other free agents this year who are trying to figure out what the heck they're going to do, whether they're going to re-up with Utah or whether they're going to sign elsewhere. And I just suspect if he were to go that route, if you're, you know, George Hill, you might be a little hesitant to re-up big. Or Inglis, who, as we both know, they have the same agent. But if you've got a chance, like for a guy like Joe, to sign with another team for 3 or 4 years for more money, then let's maybe say Utah was willing to offer you. You might be more inclined to do that if you know your boy Gordon is only going to do a 1-1. I mean, does that potentially become a factor? Just, you know, how his signing, the potential domino effect it has for the rest of that roster and the rest of those guys who are going to be free agents?
Well, here's the thing with Joe Ingles, and I think that most people miss this. He's only a restricted free agent.
He's
not unrestricted.
Okay.
So, and the second thing about Joe Ingles is he really wants to stay in Utah. Like, he doesn't want to go anywhere. Like, the only way
– so they could get him on a cheap, is what you're telling me.
Yeah, I think they could sign Joe. Well, I think they could sign Joe for less.
Good for Utah.
He wants to stay in Utah. Like, he really wants to stay. Now, George Hill, I look at George Hill coming back to Utah as a 50-50 proposition at best.
He won't get paid. You know that.
Yeah. And, no, I mean, you know, my sources tell me that, you know, Philly's going to make a run.
Yep. They should.
At George. I think that Minnesota's going to make a run at George. I think San Antonio Spurs, if they can clear enough money, they're going to try to make a run at George. I mean, there are teams out there that are going to make a run at George, and there are teams out there that are willing to pay George a max contract.
If
somebody offers George $25 million,
he's a good player. He's a good player, but damn,
you get a max contract. You get a max. Everybody getting max contracts nowadays.
You got to look at the market, Sharab.
Yeah,
and Kyle, you guys got to look at the market, like.
It's,
you know,
the right time to be a
free agent.
Point guard
market right now, right? The point guard market right now is Kyle Lowry, George Hill, maybe Chris Paul, and Drew Holiday. Like, that's your point guard market right now.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. That and you're right about that. It's what the market dictates. And George Hill did a great thing for Utah. You know that. And I think, honestly, if I'm the Jazz, their best case scenario might be that 2-year deal, because you mentioned it, Tony. If I'm Gordon Hayward and I can get the free agency again sooner, quicker, in the long run, that's going to be more money for me. Even if I do the 4-year deal elsewhere, I'll be 31 and be a free agent again, and maybe then I can get another contract. 32, are you going to get that other, you know, a big-time contract then? That's my question. And so Utah's best chance might be on that short-term deal.
Well, I think Gordon has gotten good enough that I think no matter what he decides to do, I think that at the end of this next contract, he's still going to get a max contract. Mm. You know, I don't think he's going to be Jerome James, like, when he stole all that money from the New York
Knicks.
My New York Knicks.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I think he's established himself, and I think he's going to be, you know, a top 15-ish player for the next 5 years. Like, I really do. You know, so I think no matter what he does, whether he stays with the Jazz, whether he goes with the Heat, whether he goes somewhere else, whether he goes to the Celtics, I think that he's, you know, at the end of this next contract, I think he's still going to be, you know, a max-type player. Like, you know, I think – let's say Gordon signs a 1-1 with the Jazz, I think what that does, and actually is good for Gordon, is, you know, it keeps Dennis Lindsay and the Jazz front office honest, you know, because they're going to have to, that's still added pressure to, you know, add to the roster and keep the roster fresh for Gordon, because the Jazz front office, they face tremendous pressure this year from Gordon to win. And, you know, and they did, and they made a lot of win now moves in order to impress Gordon, in order to keep Gordon in free agency. And I would argue that, you know, they stunted a couple of guys. There were a couple of guys who they kind of stunted their growth. I mean, You know, I thought Dante Exum was a kind of a Gordon Hayward casualty this year in terms of, you know, hey, you know, I think he could have gotten a lot more developmental minutes, but, the Jazz front office, they were like, well, guess what? We got to win because we got to keep Gordon. So, Dante, you take that 8 to 10 minutes a game at the shooting guard spot, and we'll try to develop you later. You know, so I think that those are some of the, you know, those are some of the, that was some of the collateral damage of you know, Utah's pursuit to keep Gordon, and we'll see if it pays off.
We've talked a lot about Gordon Hayward and his, you know, status, max contract plan and things like that. A guy that I know you're familiar with his time in Sacramento and also his brief time in Phoenix is Isaiah Thomas. When you look at his game, when you look at where he's at right now, I mean, do you see him as a max player? Because right now, man, that kid is like the best bargain in the NBA. As good as he was this past season, young fella going to make less money upcoming this season the way his contract is structured. Do you see him when he hits free agency next summer as a guy that should be in the conversation or flat out should get a max contract?
Well,
uh-oh.
Okay, here's
– See what happened.
See what happened was
– Yeah. And it pains me to say this as a guy who was a small point guard in my playing days.
You were a point guard? Is that what they call it?
Yeah, okay. Man.
He just compared himself to Isaiah Thomas. We know that, right? You heard that, right?
I didn't
right?
compare myself. I said as a guy who played – as a small point guard who loves his small point guards, by no way compare. I'm not comparing myself as a player to Isaiah Thomas.
That's a good idea, Tony. That's a good idea.
But it pains me to say this. I think Isaiah Thomas deserves every cent of a max contract. I think he deserves his $200 million. I think he deserves the Brinks truck that he thinks that he deserves.
There's a butt coming. I can feel it.
But I'm not going to be the one to pay it.
He said, you're worth it, but it ain't not worth it for me.
Yo, you deserve it, but I'm not paying it.
I mean, there are a lot of people, though, that have expressed what you're saying right now. What's your rationale why you might be hesitant to give him that money?
The rationale, there's a cap. There's a ceiling. There's a glass ceiling to how much you can win with them on the floor. Like, they literally could not defend – against Cleveland when he was on the floor. Like, they literally had no chance of defending the Cavaliers while he was on the floor. And they defended 25 times better when he was off the floor.
You think they should trade him?
And it was obvious.
Huh? You think they should trade him?
I don't know what they should do. I'm glad I'm not in that position.
Because the idea of trading a guy that's dropping 29 a game who's making, like, just over $6 million a year –
Yeah, but Sherrod, there's another end of the floor. Like, you got to defend.
This is right. This is true.
And if you're going to keep running into Cleveland for 4 years and you have no hope of defending him while he's on the floor, then that's a problem. It's the same thing with Cleveland and Kevin Love. Mm-hmm. You know, I was of the opinion they should have traded Kevin Love for Carmelo Anthony because, Kevin Love, and here's my rationale here.
Explain
Kevin
this one.
Kevin Love is great for you if you're the Cleveland Cavaliers against 29 teams, but the one team that you got to beat, he's useless against.
Oh, wow.
Because they can't defend Golden State when he was off the floor. And I know there are a lot of people that are going to say, hey, well, they won the championship last year when he was on the floor. Well, guess what? He missed a couple of games. They got back into the series with him off the floor. Mm. And they eventually won the series. And he had a really good game 7. But on the whole, Cleveland can't defend Golden State with Kevin Love on the floor. So it doesn't matter what he's doing offensively. And that's the same thing with Isaiah Thomas. It doesn't matter what he's doing offensively against Cleveland. They can't defend with him on the floor.
But, man, I guess what I look at Isaiah Thomas and I look at the fact that they finished with the best record in the Eastern Conference. And granted, it was not the best of best records, but – they played the same 82-game schedule as every other team in the East, and this cat won
more games. You know, good and well, regular season and playoffs are a different beast, just different. Mm-hmm. It's just different.
This is true.
That's true. And maybe
they got to the conference finals. But when they were struggling, it was after we learned that he had some health issues. So when he was healthy, they were pretty good.
So, Sherrod, you paying him $200 million?
$213 million.
You would give him $200 million, Sherrod?
Absolutely.
See, Tony, you know Sherrod very well. What's he doing? What he's doing right now is pandering to the hometown
crowd.
That's
Draper's new word of the month, y'all. Pandering. Let's give it up.
He's trying to get the one-on-one interview with Isaiah Thomas. You know what that is. I would give him, you know, a three-year extension or something like that, but I wouldn't give him the full 5 years.
I told you this a long time ago. Every time we've talked about Isaiah Thomas, I would max him out, but I would make it a short-term deal.
You just said the $200 million, though. You can't do a $200 million deal with a short-term.
I would give him whatever the max is.
Deion Sanders over here. Deion Sanders backpedaling already.
So what
in my playbook and everything, taking
all my life. So what do you do in year three of that contract when Isaiah would be 31 or 32?
If you have played your cards right, you will have developed his successor through one of those high lottery. Hold on. You will have developed his successor through one of those high draft picks, and at that point in time, there is more than likely going to be a team that needs a guy that can go get buckets. A team that would be what he would be a great fit for. Yeah, and they wouldn't mind taking on his contract for another year or two. If
he'll be 32 at the time.
What's that?
He'll be 32 at the time, though.
Mm. Do you honestly think? I mean, listen. What does he do well? Get buckets. I don't think that's going to change. I think that's who he is.
He is an offensive machine. He's an offensive machine.
And if you're a team that is struggling to get offense going, like for example, you look at the Miami Heat this past year. Could you imagine how good they would have been if they had one guy who could go out and get buckets? That team probably would have won 50 games this year.
But it's the same thing with the Jazz and George Hill. I mean, here's the conundrum with the Jazz and George Hill.
They win with that dude's on the floor, man. You know that better than I do.
Yes. And here's the thing, and if I'm Dennis Lindsay, I'm saying, okay, I might eat a max contract if it's 2 or 3 years. But if you want 5 years, you know, year four and year five, that has the potential to be ugly for George Hill. And that's the thing with Isaiah Thomas. Year four and year five of a max deal for him, which he would sign after next year, would he be 33 and 34 years old? That has the potential to be ugly.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
Yeah. I think.
I just think you have to have 3 or 4 guys that can get it done at a max level. And I see him as being one of your top 3 or 4 guys. That's all.
And here's the other thing, the other question I have with Isaiah Thomas. If Gordon Hayward decides to go to Boston, he's got to subjugate his game a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And Gordon's got to subjugate his game a little bit. And the way Gordon played in Utah is he had the ball in his hands. They got George Hill especially for the reason that he's not a ball-in-hand point guard. He's, you know, he's a guy who goes spot up in the corners. He's a guy who'll defend, you know, the heck out of other point guards. And he's a guy that could blend in while Gordon is still the primary ball handler.
Right.
And to me, that's an advantage that Utah has over Boston. In Utah, the offense is going through Gordon. The ball is going through Gordon's hands. It's not going to be that way in Boston if he goes to Boston.
Okay.
All right. Tony Jones breaking it down for us, man. We're going to let you get out of here. A lot of good insight into the Gordon Hayward situation. I'm going to just ask one final question. If you had to throw some money down, where does Gordon Hayward play next season?
Why are you doing this to me, man?
All right. that's your version of kissing up to the Utah Jazz fans. You don't want to say anything to make them upset right now.
I think if
Deion Sanders is in the building, y'all. Look at his backpedal. He's in coverage mode.
I still think Gordon stays. I really do.
I've never seen Tony move that fast before. My goodness.
I'm going to qualify this. This is not me reporting. I am not reporting that Gordon is staying because I don't know. But I think my gut tells me if you guys had made me bet and throw some money down, I would I think Gordon stays and signs a 1 year, a 1-1 contract.
Wow.
That's my guess.
You about to jack that franchise, hold them hostage. I see what you're doing. Okay, Gordon.
Hey, you get that leverage that way, too.
I'm not mad at you for that, though.
That leverage,
I'm not mad at you for that.
All right, Tony, get on out of here, man. Thanks for joining us.
Appreciate you, Tony.
Wait a minute. What do you guys think he does?
I think he stays in Utah.
I think he stays in Utah. I've said that from the jump. But if he decides to bolt, I think he's coming to Boston.
Okay. I just didn't want to know.
You just didn't want to be by yourself. That's what that's about.
You know how it was when we was kids. I'll be like, yo, why don't you go out there and you're not gonna get in trouble. Go ahead and do that.
Let him out there. Let him walk
and then
the plank
slam the
by
door
himself.
When
you're
out there.
I know.
Lock it. Yep.
He thinks we're right behind him, and then he turned around. We're not there. All
right. Yeah, I turn around and be like, that was Tony Jones, everybody. Tony Jones, give him my hand.
We ain't going to do that to you, Tony. I agree, man. I think he stays in Utah, man. All right, Tony. Thanks so much, bro.
All right, Tony. I'll see you in a couple weeks, man.
Thanks, guys, man. I appreciate you guys.
All right, man.
All right, shout out to Tony Jones for coming.
Tony Jones.
Did we put him in a bad spot?
We put him where he should be.
I feel
Take
bad.
Take a stand. You're either going to man-to-man coverage or drop back in coverage. And he clearly dropped that drop back in coverage.
Yeah, he didn't want no
My
part
goodness.
Of that question. But,
Man.
No, we both agree. Gordon Hayward, you know, the odds are that he goes back to Utah. Blake Griffin, I think maybe more likely.
I think he's a coin toss. I really
coin
do.
Toss.
Just because they've got so many other issues affecting that Clippers franchise, and I think all their guys, you know, him, J.J. Redick, Chris Paul, I don't think Doc Rivers feels comfortable with any of those guys coming back because the team just hasn't been able to have the kind of take that next step that you want. And obviously some of that has to do with injuries, but also, you know, they had Game 7 in their building against a Utah team that hadn't been to the playoffs in a while, and they didn't get it done.
Game 7, yeah. All right, so if you're the Celtics, let's say you don't get Gordon. Let's say you don't get Blake. Number of fallback options. I don't know if Celtics fans would be happy some of these options, though.
I don't think the fans will be thrilled just because they know the kind of guys that the Celtics wanted to bring in here and thought they had a shot at. But, I mean, you got to look at guys like Gallinari, for example. And when the guys that I'm talking about now, you're not signing these guys to 4 or 5 year deals.
Right.
Or, excuse me, 4 year deals. You're looking at a year or two, maybe the second year team option or second year partial guarantee, because you still want to have a certain amount of flexibility going forward, knowing when you got guys like Isaiah Thomas, Avery Bradley around the corner, you know, Marcus Smart. You got to figure out what you're going to do with him as well. So, you know, guys like, you know, Gallinari, I think is a good one. Some other, I think, would be sneaky good, sneaky nice pickups. James Johnson of Miami.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be surprised if the Heat find a way to not re-sign him, because, I mean, he had a Lazarus moment this entire season where he was basically on the scrap heap. Nobody wanted him. And now all of a sudden, he was a big part of why they made that resurgence this year. When they made him more of a point forward, that's when this Miami Heat team really, I thought, started to take
off. Does he fit in with Boston?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, to me, he's like Evan Turner 2.0, a guy that can play multiple positions, can handle the ball, can take some of that pressure off Isaiah, and doesn't have, I think, some of the defensive liabilities that maybe some of the other guards that Boston had. I'm thinking specifically about Terry Rozier. Great speed, but at 6'1", 6'2", he doesn't have the size if, let's say, a team decides to go a little bit bigger in the backcourt. I like him. I like Patrick Patterson.
My guy.
He's a shooter. That's what he do.
He's a big that can knock down the three.
If you decide that Kelly Olynyk is not part of the plans going forward, you're going to need a stretch big type to come
in
there.
And he's a strong defender too, man.
Right, he's a better defender. Yeah. He can play some five, I think, in small ball lineups because he does have some size. But those are the type of guys that if you're the Boston Celtics and you can't get that one or two superstars to make your big three an actual big three, then you got to look at some of those other guys that you can maybe bring in for a couple years, help you stay relevant, stay near the top of the East.
I think Gallinari I would like him on the squad.
And Danny,
actually.
And we already know Danny. I mean,
a few
not
years
like,
ago,
yeah,
he
it's
was
not like this is a guy that all of a sudden that they say, I wonder what you. No, they've liked this guy for a while, so that wouldn't, I think, come as a shock to anyone. And frankly, he would be a kind of guy I think that fans would embrace because they've seen the skill set, they've seen him come into the Garden and bust the Celtics, and they don't forget that. I'm just hoping Jay Crowder is would approve
right,
that.
Right, exactly.
We already know.
And could he play alongside Al in a 4 or 5, or are they too small? You think?
I think
or is he a bench guy? Like,
I would love for him to come off the bench, but I think unless they can get someone that can legitimately solidify that four spot, I think you almost have to start him. And, you know, his ability to score, I think, is going to make Al better because now Al has a big man target that he can actually look to, and that guy can do some work. And because Al has the ability to be a just a great pick and pop guy, we didn't see a whole lot of that with Al. But if you have a guy like Gallinari on his team, Al can play a little bit further away from when he's in the paint. He can play actually away from the paint a little bit and hit that mid-range shot, which we didn't see a lot of. But if you look at his analytics numbers when he was in Atlanta, that was the that was his cash money shot. We just didn't see that.
Yeah,
much.
A lot of those elbow jumpers and
because he was playing with a guy like Millsap, and that's why that shot was there.
What about Millsap? I know you don't want Atlanta 2.0, but what about Millsap?
Here's my issue with Paul, and I love Paul. Love his game. He's just he's one of those guys that if you like physical, grimy guys who can get it done, he's your
guy.
But he's old. He's old. And the kind of contract that he's looking for, he's looking for 4 years max. And so if I'm Boston,
hell no.
I'm not paying that dude max money.
Yeah.
And it's not even about the talent. It's about the impact on your cap. I mean, if you pay him that kind of money, it probably means that you have decided that we're going to try to win now. And guess what? You want to compete now.
Right.
Because I don't think adding him is going to make you
put
all of a sudden a
team top,
can put you over the top. And so, you know, he's a guy that I think if I'm in the Celtics, I'd holler at his agent and see, you know, what they're talking about. And when they say 4 years max, then it's like, okay, good luck with that.
That's not how that works out. That's not how it works out. It's going to be a busy next few weeks for the Celtics. No doubt about that. July 1st, free agency starts. But before then, the NBA draft.
Markelle Fultz.
It's Fultz, right? I mean.
I just don't see how it couldn't be.
Yeah.
I mean, as tempting as, like, you know, a Josh Jackson might be, just because of his athleticism and his two-way talent, I think you have to take a guy that has two things going for him. One, a skill that you can actually benefit from initially, and his ability to score in ISO situations off the dribble, I think you like. And two, has the potential to be a star. I think Josh Jackson is going to be a really good player.
Right.
I really do. I just don't see that stardom in his game.
Like, what's his skill that's going to make him into
a star? He's an incredible athlete.
But
the problem I have with Josh, and this is no fault of his own, he played so much at the power forward spot in college that when he's beating guys off the dribble, they're slower than him. And when he has smaller guys on him, he has the athleticism to just take them out. So I don't – and his mid-range jump shot is horrible. His mechanics on his jump shot are just crap. But, again, I love him
you
as love a player.
Him,
I do. I love him as a player because he really is athletic and he really does get after it from a defensive standpoint. But guys like that typically don't develop into stars. They develop into very good role players down the road, and there's nothing wrong with that. I think, like I said, he's going to be a good player in this league for a long time. But – Fultz has that superstar potential. 6'4", 6'9", 6'10", wingspan. And let's not forget, the kid ain't stopped growing. I mean, he just turned 19 just a few weeks ago. So this kid has the potential to be maybe 6'6", 6'7", before he's all done. And his wingspan, you got to believe, will expand to be about 7 feet. So now all of a sudden, you know, he's nearing the end of his rookie contract. He's 20 years old, 6'6", 6'7", point guard / two guard with a 7-foot wingspan who's been playing on a championship-caliber team ever since he's been in the league. But we want to trade that pick.
Nah. Fultz, and like I said, you know, don't overthink it, Danny.
Just take the guy that fits, and
is going to be the best. Because
my concern, and it's legit because it almost happened. My man in Miami, who Danny was ready to go all in for.
Winslow.
I mean, Justice Winslow. Yeah. He was ready to trade the farm, the cattle.
Charlotte turned down that
deal.
And they turned it down.
And I fear that he is going to see or has seen someone that he has fallen in love like that with, who might be a good player, but. When you take a minute to sit back and look at what you put on the table and look at what you get in return,
right?
You gotta have that. Oh hell no! What the hell was I thinking?
Never mind.
My bad, Phil. I don't know.
Some of the best trades are ones that don't happen.
Absolutely.
Man.
That will go down as one of the greatest trades that Boston Celtics did not make.
Did not easy. Make. All right, Sherrod, let's get on out of here. We will be back next Thursday, the 22nd, for our draft special. We'll be down at the Garden with the Celtics. Make sure you tune in to CSN. from 7 to 9 p.m. draft night, the Celtics with the number one overall pick. And of course, as we lead you up to the draft, make sure you subscribe to the Best of the Boston Sports Tonight podcast. You can listen to it in your car every morning as you drive to work, as the crew recaps the day's top stories and debates all the biggest topics going on in the world of sports. Make sure you check it out on Apple Podcasts, also on Google Play, Stitcher, all the podcasting apps, and CSNNE.com. For A'Sherrod Blakely, I'm Kyle Draper. Thanks for joining us on the Celtics Talk Podcast.
We out!